Okay.
Mayor, we should call the roll real quick. Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Salzman? Hales?
You did 23 and 29, I believe. And so next up is 24, which is another one of those multi-part options. This is the pairing of off-street parking and transportation demand management. And the off-street parking has a couple options. The transportation demand management directive is the same in all three, except that we've revised the language. So to aid you in this discussion, you should have two pieces of paper, one that looks like this, that has the a revised directive concerning transportation demand management. And then you should have a piece
like
of paper
this.
That says option B for amendment 34 as well. That's a supplemental piece of material that was not distributed earlier.
I don't. Obviously, do.
Right. This is half sheet, half page.
Half page, correct. So the three options that we crafted, and of course you could bundle these motions differently than I did, but there's an A, B, and C choice, and A is to act only on amendment number 51, which is the directive to adopt further TDM work, or okay. to direct further TDM work. Without adopting changes to the off-street parking requirements. Option B removes the minimum off-street parking requirements that you put in place in 2012, which is Amendment 34, and also adopts the TDM directive. And then Option C takes a different approach, which is represented by this half sheet that was shown earlier, and that's a version that has been suggested by Commissioner Fish. And I can go through these a little bit more detail, but before I did that, I wanted to show a map. This map is just a reminder that the current off-street parking requirements waive parking for buildings over 30 units where they're close to frequent transit, and the lines on this map show the frequent transit. There are two different flavors. The yellow is what TriMet considers frequent bus line, and then the gray is the stuff that isn't TriMet frequent service but does meet our definition. Or did, at least when we made this map last year, some of those gray lines could come in and out each year depending on the bus cuts or changes. But it gives you a geographic idea of what geography we're talking about.
It's not just light rail, it's bus.
It's frequent bus and light rail stops, and it's defined as 20-minute peak hour or greater, which could be either AM or PM peak, but it's 20 minutes is the cutoff here with.
Just a clarification. Was it in 2013 rather than 2012 when you adopted the current requirement?
It might have been 2013. I may have that
I think
wrong.
It was early 2013.
Yeah. So just a reminder that the current code and the PSC recommendation essentially was to there's still limited parking required for buildings over 30 units based on the table that I just put on the screen. Farther from transit, there would be still parking requirements that are higher than that. And then small lots, it was recommended by the PSC in the mixed-use zones that very small lots not have parking requirements. And this parallels the current code, which gives some of the CN zone and CS zone properties, which are usually those small lots, doesn't require parking there. So the PSC recommendation was essentially status quo on parking, but adjusting it to match the new mixed-use code framework. If you could change the slide. They also recommended a few other changes, wider allowances for commercial parking, maximum ratios, greater allowance for shared parking, and then, of course, the TDM program being applied to buildings with 10 or more units. Keep going. So option A as I said, would keep the existing framework for buildings over 30 units, which is the compromise that was worked out in 2013. And in parallel with that, direct us to do further work prior to the effective date of this ordinance. And as you recall, this whole package isn't going into effect until January 2018. So you would be directing PBOT to do more work to clarify the TDM, the process behind the new TDM requirement for mixed use and campus zones. You would also be directing us to develop an expanded phase two, which you would consider at that time. So it doesn't commit us to that, but it asks us to go prepare options for that. And then the last bullet is to acknowledge that you'd be directing us to revisit the parking question at that time in light of whatever we come up with that, with those more detailed and revised TDM requirements. And that just reflects the fact that we think these two are related issues, and that whenever you open one, you should probably look at both. Option B then would remove those requirements, as I said, for the mixed use zones, but leave the same TDM directive in place. And then option C is a different version, which would remove the parking requirements from residential developments, but only if the building is following one of several paths that includes affordable housing, either bonuses or the future mandatory or voluntary inclusionary housing provisions. And so this relates to the upcoming consideration of that ordinance.
So, Mayor, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
May I propose that we take the motions up as follows? Motion A first, because that effectively is the first test as to whether we're going to go with effectively a status quo or a change. And then, depending on the outcome of that vote, go to Motion C, because Motion C then has the condition, links brings the affordable housing piece into the equation. And then depending on the outcome of that, bring Motion B in, because that's essentially Motion C stripped of the affordable housing component.
I would like to have an up or down vote on Motion B.
On what? I'm sorry, could you say that again, Commissioner?
I would like to keep it the way it is, to vote on Motion A first and Motion B second.
Well, the problem with that, Steve, is that Motion C is Motion B with an amendment. So all I'm suggesting is, rather than amend Motion B to conform to C, why don't we take up the amendment first and see if that passes? And if it doesn't, then Motion B is the clean approach. Otherwise, what I'll do is just make a motion to amend B to conform to C, and I think that makes it more
comfortable. Well, but hang on. Before we do that, I mean, I think we should unbundle and understand our choices. I agree with you about taking an up or down on an A, because are we okay with the status quo? That will determine that question. And if we aren't okay with the status quo, then what are we going to do?
Right.
I mean, status quo plus TDM, but status quo in terms of the regulatory requirement. Option B is a more sweeping approach to not requiring parking.
Right.
And option C is a not a compromise in that sense, but it's a more focused application of the change.
Right. And by the way, and I was going to say more when C came forward, but my sense is that option C will effectively, the impact of option C is that it will work just like option B, with the exception being, instead of waiving a current requirement, we'll be creating a linkage, so there's actually a public benefit for each time it's triggered, and my assumption is it will be triggered in each and every instance.
Well, let's go ahead and stay in discussion, then we can figure out what we want to do about motions. So help us out here, staff, and that is, what's the universe of, if we were to pick B versus C, or vice versa, what's the change in the universe of projects that are not required to provide parking?
Right. Well, if inclusionary housing programs pass and go into effect, the universe will be virtually identical, in the sense that the only buildings that we require to have parking is those over 30 units will also be subject to inclusionary housing every time. So in every case, this exception would get triggered, as Commissioner Fish just said. The universe would be different, however, if inclusionary housing doesn't end up going into effect.
For one of two reasons. The council doesn't adopt it, which is highly unlikely, or it's challenged in court on some constitutional basis, and in the interim, what we have is a voluntary system, not a mandatory system.
Right. So under that scenario, the provisions in the Commissioner Frisch version allude and point to voluntary bonuses that are built into the mixed-use codes that you're considering today that would be the default if inclusionary housing doesn't pass. And so that would still allow those projects that are using the voluntary bonuses to get a relief on the parking, but projects, you know, that didn't do that. An example might be if someone tried to build a building just based on the standard code without using the bonuses for affordable housing, they would trigger the parking. If they used the bonuses, they wouldn't.
Well, Mayor, let me connect the dots. When I was briefed on this, what staff told me was that if we take off the minimum parking requirements in some of the target development that's likely to occur, it has a substantial value to the developer. And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings. And in the current market that we're in, there is no guarantee that being relieved of that obligation, there's going to be any pressure downward on rents. We are in a unique market right now where it is at least conceivable that relieved of one regulatory obligation, what we have done is we have made the pro forma more generous for the developer, because there's a competition for scarce units and people are willing to pay a premium. Now, enter stage left or right, however we want to look at it, is we're going to have a debate about inclusionary housing. And I'm not well-versed in all the details, but Dan will be proposing a bunch of benefits that we'll be offering people to buy down to close to 60% or below of MFI. And my understanding is the toolkit will include things like FAR, systems development charges, a whole range of things, which will, with the exception of FAR, will come out of someone's pocket. Mm-hmm. They'll cost us something. If we do a tax abatement, Deborah Cafori has to agree to it. It comes out of the county budget. If it's a systems development charge, we're robbing Peter to pay Paul, and on and on. What my amendment is trying to get at is that by relieving someone of this obligation to have the parking, which may be good for the environment, may be good for smart planning, may have all these independent reasons why you want to do it, it also has a significant economic impact on the developer. And since we are about to debate a set of tools which we will propose to essentially buy down the rents in the affordability component of mandatory inclusionary housing, it seemed like this is a unique opportunity to take two things, a desire to change our parking rules and leverage off the windfall that goes to a developer, and merge them so that this becomes one of the things that we can cite to as buying down the affordability. Now, what I've heard from Joe Zender in my last briefing is that this approach is not, you know, ideal for code writing on this exercise. That doesn't quite fit. You know, we'll be doing something in French where English is preferred, but notwithstanding that caveat, Joe doesn't think it's a dumb idea. He's just not sure that this is the right process to achieve the goal. Here's my ultimate concern, Charlie. Every time we've talked about how to seize an opportunity to leverage affordable housing of late, and I'll cite to the example on transit corridors, where we said, hey, maybe we could downzone and then give people bonuses and as a way of getting affordability. We've been told that there is some reason why we can't do that. Well, here we're completely clean because we don't have to change our parking minimums.
Right.
But if we are, and if it results in a substantial savings to a developer, why not now, if this is the council will, why not now link that to IZ so that this becomes something on the menu of options which buys down the affordability component, recognizing that in almost every instance, that's what will happen.
Right.
Commissioner, may I respond to that?
Sure, go ahead, Steve.
If we eliminate parking minimums, the overall cost of development will go down. So fewer incentives will be necessary to make inclusionary housing policy work. Maintaining this parking requirement is a way of driving up the overall cost of housing. The White House weighed in on this recently in a statement on a variety of zoning-type rules that prevent development of housing supply, and they listed off-street parking requirements as one of the local, quote, local rules inhibiting new housing development that have resulted in undersupplied markets, reducing options for working families, and causing housing costs to grow much faster than wages itself. Parking minimums raise the cost of housing. If, for whatever reason, we wind up not adopting or not being able to implement inclusionary housing, then we'll still have this provision that drives up the cost of housing across the spectrum. And I think that the idea that we should preserve a policy that increases the cost of housing as part of a strategy to create more affordable housing is as convoluted as it sounds.
I understand that. I guess I want to respond as well. I like the approach that you're taking, Commissioner Fish, in that I'm operating on an assumption that we are going to move forward with inclusionary housing. No surprise there. I also am operating under an assumption that this parking incentive, assuming it's provided, or the benefit of not providing parking, the financial benefit of providing parking, it will not in and of itself be sufficient to offset the market impacts of our inclusionary housing requirement. We might have to give other incentives in addition to that.
Less of something else.
Yeah, but right. Some additional, you know, weights in the balance in order for it to tip towards feasibility. I don't know exactly how much more, but I'm assuming that this won't be enough all by itself. I also am intrigued by the possibility, maybe it's a vain hope, that doing it the way you suggested will give everyone an incentive to make sure our inclusionary housing policy works rather than having people want to argue about it.
Well, and Mayor, one other, I appreciate both comments, but I'll use, maybe this is a feeble analogy, but we all just got dealt a hand in a game of poker and there's an ace in our hand. I'm not going to trade that in for another card right now.
Right.
We are creating value, and I don't disagree with what Steve said about the economics, which is why I think the likely outcome will be this plus something else will get us to what we want, which is a certain kind of development with the affordability. And remember, if it's mandatory IZ, our subsidies by state law can be a lighter touch. If it's a discretionary IZ, it's going to have to be more market-based. That's the key distinction. But the legislature gave us latitude. They said some consideration. They didn't overly prescribe it. I would just hate to take this tool out of our kit.
Right.
And by the way, if at some point there's a complication in the future about the future of IZ or something else, I would argue let's come back and revisit this, but not take this tool off the table now. That's all.
Yeah.
I think it's a unique moment to seize this opportunity.
Other comments?
Commissioner,
you'll get a word in at some point.
What will have to do to have an effective IZ program?
Say that again, Steve. I'm sorry. Say that again, please.
What we're going to have to do to have an effective IZ program is to have a rule and a package of incentives to make it economically feasible to create housing that includes affordable housing at the lower end. If you take the cost of parking off the top at the beginning, you get as much closer to making the affordable housing economically viable as you do if you take it off somewhere down the line. I mean, the economic impact is the same no matter where you do it. the risk that you take if you tie, if you adopt Commissioner Fisher's amendment is we wind up with only a voluntary program. And there's people who don't choose to follow the voluntary program, and they don't build housing that's affordable below 80% or 60% MFI, but all the housing that they do build is that much more expensive for everybody above 80% MFI. So it's that much more expensive for people less 90% than 100% and 110% MFI, and I think we need to be worried about those people too.
Well, here's
so I think that there's nothing lost by taking the requirement off the top as opposed to saving it as a carrot later.
So, Mayor, I guess the only comment I would have to that is that I think it will be easier to operate off of my proposal and make the fine-tuning later than to bring it back in. And if we're wrong about either the forecast about IZ or how the market works, we can fine-tune this. And by the way, we're talking about changes that are going to be in the future here. I think that we get the strong headwinds at our back and not at our face. And if we're wrong, we'll fine-tune it. But why miss this opportunity to acknowledge that there's a benefit to the developer? And in this market, you can do any forecast you want. There's still no guarantee of affordable rents absent a mandate. And that money, we may be relieving someone of one obligation and just increasing their profits. The impact on IZ is hard to anticipate because it's not even before us and we haven't adopted it. I'm simply saying don't miss this opportunity to bake it in. And if I'm wrong, if our thinking is wrong, we can revisit it.
Commissioner Ritz, you have some thoughts?
Thank you, Mayor. Unless Commissioner Novick has more to say.
Steve, I think we're going to give Amanda a chance here.
Thank you. So I agree with you, Commissioner. We don't want to give away our ace, and we haven't had any discussion at all with the public on inclusionary housing yet, but that's still to come. So my recommendation is to go with option A, which is don't do 34, do not give away the parking minimums until we've discussed inclusionary housing, what incentives we can or should do, what the rules for that is. I have not seen any evidence that says that comparable apartments with or without parking are less expensive. And certainly when my son and daughter-in-law were shopping, there didn't seem to be any discernible difference as to whether a unit came with a parking spot or not. And as you have said, in this market, developers are charging whatever they can get, and so are landlords.
Commissioner Fritz, may I just comment that...
I'd really rather you let me finish.
I want to support you, something you said.
Okay, go ahead.
As the only renter on this council, I can say that the way landlords are now doing parking is they are charging everyone the same rate and charging an extra cost for the parking. In my building, which has about 400 units, if you want parking, it is the market rent plus a parking space. And that is it your option to support your point.
Well,
but they're not able to rent all of the spaces, and I think you probably know that, so the cost of every other unit is inflated to cover that, I'm sure.
I think, thank you, Mayor. Rather than guessing and using our own intelligence to figure what might or might not happen, I think we should do 51, which is the transportation demand management, go look at the whole issue, have the different discussion on inclusionary zoning, and have this as certainly one of the options for what we can give developers in return for affordable housing. We need to have a separate discussion on parking alone. I thought it was more in 2011 that we went through all of the challenges on division. There were literally hundreds of people involved in it, and I think that most people are not aware that we could be getting rid of parking minimums in this comprehensive plan process. So, and especially when the hearings have been on the afternoons of work days. So I know that more people would like to discuss this. It's a particularly good example of looking at the issue with an equity lens. Who benefits? Who pays? Is that fair? Which workers are going to suffer because there may not be parking for them? And often it would be the shift workers who tend to be more women. I'd just like to draw to your attention, I kept a tally during the hearing that we had on this as to how many men and women supported removing the parking or keeping the parking. So removing parking was 13 males and 4 females, most of them quite young and looking like that cycling would be an option for them. Keeping the parking was 6 women and 1 older gentleman. So I don't know that. I wonder if any of you have had to think about parking underneath a streetlight and then walking back to your door with your car keys between your fingers in case you would get attacked. Because that is kind of a normal thing for women to have to think about, is how safe is it from getting from the bus stop to my home. It's a very intricate discussion that we should be having, and we should be having it in a holistic way so that we do make sure that we're going to make decisions in the right order. So to me, that would be 51, which has the transportation demand management, and then inclusionary housing, then a discussion on parking alone, and then looking at the equity issues and coming back to these issues. So I would really appreciate if we would go with not doing 31 right now and doing 51, and then we're leaving all of those options open to us rather than closing doors or cementing them in.
Well, we got a lot of testimony on this issue. I mean, I disagree with the characterization that we haven't ventilated this. I think we got a lot of testimony about whether we should keep the minimum parking requirements or not. And I believe it was early 2013 because I voted for it, and I think it was a mistake. So so I think, you know, the threshold question of are we going to stick with required minimum parking or not is a legitimate threshold question, and we can answer that by voting on A. And then what is what arises with B versus C? And one says, go ahead and do it now across the board and count the benefits. Frankly, Commissioner Novick, I'm hoping that it would be that the our beneficence would be remembered by those that would still be asking for more when in exchange for inclusionary housing. I'm not sure that our beneficence would be remembered even a week or two later.
It would be taken as a given.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why I'm more inclined to go with option C if we are going to make the change than to hope that that what we've already put on the ledger to make it more feasible to meet our inclusionary housing requirement would still be given full consideration if it were done prior to the calculus of what you get in exchange.
Mayor, can I ask the housing commissioner a question? Because I think it's the, for me, the final piece of just this discussion. Dan, you've been doing some modeling in support of your inclusionary housing work, and you'll be coming to council with some recommendations.
Right.
I assume that your modeling was based on the existing parking requirements. In other words, whatever the costs were and the impact of IZ, you were assuming that developers were otherwise required to meet the existing code for parking minimums.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Okay, Mayor. So I think we should proceed.
All right. So should we try walking through in that way? Let's take up Amendment A first and see how we stand on that and then move on to the other two. Okay, let's take a motion, please, for option A.
Second. I'm going to second for purposes of debate.
So let's take a vote on that, please, unless there's any further questions or discussion. Okay.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, this is A or B?
This is A.
Yeah.
Osman?
No.
Novick?
Steve?
A lot of barking there, Steve.
Oh, sorry. All right. I'm going to second what the mayor just said about making a mistake in 2013. I'm proud of the work I've done in this council, but I'm not all proud supporting the 2013 proposal to add parking minimums in frequent transit areas. Only Commissioner Saltzman did the right thing at that time and opposed that proposal. Parking minimums are inconsistent with what should be two of our main policy goals, promoting housing affordability and fighting climate disruption. I noted earlier what the White House had to say recently about the effect of parking minimums on the cost of housing. But parking minimums are also a way of continuing to build society around the cost. And if we are to prevent catastrophic climate disruption, we do need to get people out of their cars. Studies show that people are most likely to change their transportation habits when they move. Someone who moves into a new home without on-site parking is obviously more likely to discard their car and start relying on walking, bicycling, and transit, plus perhaps an occasional cab ride, than someone who moves into a new home with on-site parking. Again, the White House weighed in on it. Quote, when transit-oriented developments are intended to help reduce automobile dependence, parking requirements can undermine that goal by inducing new residents to drive, thereby counteracting city goals for increased use of public transit, walking, and biking, end quote. In 2 weeks, the council will vote to prevent the siting of new major fossil fuel terminals in Portland. When it comes to fighting climate disruption, today's votes on parking minimums are more important. Fossil fuels are like narcotics, not going to solve the problem by trying to disrupt the supply. As long as demand is there, supply will find demand. Eliminating parking minimums is an important step to reducing demand. If we prevent new fossil fuel terminals that pass in this opportunity to eliminate parking minimums, we could fairly be charged with climate fossil. I recognize that for to eliminate parking minimums, we need to give our neighborhoods more robust tools to manage parking demand through permit systems. And I'm working with CLAP to see if we can bring the new parking toolkit to council before the end of the year. And we've got a first meeting scheduled on December 15th. But even if that's not feasible, I'm confident that the Bureau will be ready to present the toolkit later in the winter or as late as in the spring. I vote no.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I do believe it was a close call then, and it's a close call now. But I think it was a mistake on my part to support these minimums, although we did it for understandable reasons. You know, I've been trying in my service on this council, both in the past and now, to try to preserve neighborhood livability, issues like historic preservation, accommodate a huge amount of growth, and move us towards a carbon-free future. All those things do not rectify easily, but I've, again, on this issue, been particularly struck by the demographic distinction about the many young new Portlanders or young Portlanders who argued for a parking-less future, and I think that's where we need to go on this. We are going to have, there will be traffic. There will be congestion. There is now and there will be more, but we are not going to be able to accommodate 200,000 more cars for 200,000 more people in this city. Finally, on a personal note, living on a block that used to have lots of available parking and now is a favorite park and ride, I like it better because the traffic moves slower now that it's more crowded.
So I'd like to move option C, but if you would consider it, Commissioner Fish. I'm uncomfortable adding your specific code language because I think we should have a public hearing on this. I think actually the option C as modified on this paper will get us all to where we need to be. It says that we're going to direct PBAM to come back with further changes, including recommendations to increase or decrease the minimum or maximum number of required off-street parking, but it does it in that kind of logical sequencing and including a consideration of IZ, of inclusionary zoning, that I was hoping for. So I'm moving C, but without your additional language, because I think we should get there, but get there later.
Not sure if I follow that, so help me out here. So option C, as stated in the materials from the Bureau, is a provision that either voluntary or mandatory inclusionary housing requirements are the trigger for the lifting of a requirement for off-street parking. Are you saying that stays?
That is the amendment. I mean, that's the guts of it.
That's the guts of it, right. But then this additional language... Can you help us here?
Yeah, the description there was intended to be referring to the additional language. That is C in our mind was the additional language.
Right. What Commissioner Fisher's?
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
I from the city attorney, don't we have to take testimony on code changes?
Well, at this point, you've heard testimony and you're having amendments proposed in response to that testimony. So you can do that. You're not required to take testimony on all amendments.
Okay. I mean, we heard from 24 people. That doesn't seem a lot, given the far-reaching nature of it.
Just so we're clear, there was a lot of testimony about the need to leverage affordable housing, and I've just come up with a tool, not a perfect tool, but a tool to make sure that the benefit we're conferring results in a public benefit by linking it to IZ, which, again, from staff's interpretation of this, will mean in virtually every case this is exercised, but this becomes one of the tools. as the mayor said, there may still be some additional consideration we have to offer to get what we're looking for, but it puts it in play, and that's the gist of what I'm proposing.
And I can support that, so I'll second that.
Thank you.
Okay. So option C is moved and seconded. Further discussion before we take a vote on that? Okay. Vote, please.
Just want to be clear that option C does include this language as we wrote it.
Yes.
It includes both, right?
The red underlined and Commissioner Fish's half page.
And as I read it, Commissioner Fish says that that's when there's affordable housing and when it's near transit.
Right.
And it also includes all the errata that we have put together in this notebook. Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I appreciate that.
All right. Let's vote then, please.
Prince.
Aye.
Fish.
I want to thank Jamie Dunphy in my office for working on short notice to craft this. I want to thank the staff at the Planning Bureau for being superb partners, which generally means when the door is closed and I'm with senior folks, they push back on a lot of what we're thinking to make sure that we're doing it in a thoughtful, coherent way. And if this approach falls short, colleagues, then I would propose we revisit it in the future. Aye.
Councilman.
Well, as all my colleagues know, the inclusionary housing legislation that passed in Salem requires that local governments provide some sort of an offset to the development for affordable housing under the law. And as we move into considering and debating this in the next few weeks, I think it's very important that we hold on to this powerful incentive we do have to get developers to take advantage of the inclusionary zoning, whether it's the voluntary 60% of median income or below, or the required 80% of median income. But as the modeling and everything shows, being able to waive on-site parking is a powerful tool, and we need to keep it for the use for inclusionary housing. And so that's why I'm supporting this amendment, and I thank Commissioner Fish for putting the words on the paper. Aye.
Novick.
Steve, did you hear that? That's you.
No, I didn't. I haven't been hearing the call. I want to recently recommend that we're going to have irrational requirements that we can then waive to encourage affordable housing. We should also adopt a requirement that everybody get a pony when they get a new house, and then we can waive that for affordable housing. No.
Hales.
We've heard from a lot of people in this comprehensive plan process, neighborhoods, individual citizens, and even organizations, and the fact that we could have organizations like Oregon Walks or a new one, Portlanders for Parking Reform, mean that we live in a city where people actually think about this stuff, and that's a good thing, and I appreciate their help. Aye. Okay. Let's move forward.
Okay. Motion 25. Is amendments to the proposed street vacation code, and this amendment has been further modified through a memo from Commissioner Fritz dated November 15th. And I believe you have the final language on that, Commissioner.
And are you comfortable with that, Commissioner Fritz?
I think there's just one, there's a couple of amendments suggested by City Attorney Catherine Beaumont. And one is to, has everybody found the changes that Commissioners Novick and I have worked out?
I'm looking for it.
So this is the approval criteria for 1784.025. And the one further amendment is to... delete the needed in the future, is that right?
Yeah, you had talked about that.
So it would now read, so that's, I don't understand this, Catherine. Could you explain it to us?
You're fading, Commissioner.
Okay, hang on a minute, Commissioner Novick. We're looking for copies here in order to be able to discuss this. So I don't see that deletion of needed in the future. We've talked about that.
Yeah, I think we need that in there.
Not needed in the future. Okay, there we go.
Not needed in the future. Yeah. That's what you do in street vacations, is you think about it. So what was it that you wanted to change, Catherine? Or if Claire in my office is available to come and give us copies or something.
All right,
that's a great idea.
Good idea. All right, we're going to move on to another one and come back to this when we're better equipped. So let's.
I'm sorry, I wasn't aware that I was supposed to bring the copies from.
You and me both. Okay, let's move to number 26. You want to go to 26?
So 26 is amendment number 41. This replaces a portion of the South Waterfront Street Plan and related narrative in the TSP with revised text to accommodate recommended changes in the vicinity of the South Portal. You heard a discussion of this on November 16th, and I believe it's coming back to you on Monday for a resolution.
Right.
And this amendment essentially directs you to, provided that that resolution passes, it directs us to make the parallel amendment to this package. There'd be no sense in amending the current TSP and not also amend the new one that'll go into effect in 2018.
So this is anticipating what Abby is going to bring to council next week?
Correct. And so today, the way you'd word it is if that resolution passes on next week, that we are directed to incorporate the same version in this package.
Okay.
Do we have to have the date on it? I mean, supposing it doesn't get done by December 14th.
Well, the only reason it has to be done before December 14th is that's when we're coming back for final action on this, so we would need to know whether it's in or out by then.
Okay. I would say, Mayor, that I was expecting to have some more discussion on that with somebody's staff in the interim, and so far, I mean, we've been very busy.
You could take that out, but as a practical matter, we would still need it.
Got it. That's all right. I just wanted to let you know that I would still like to have some more discussion of what
we
was on
table. We're going to have that discussion, but this is... This will be moot if we don't do anything.
Got it,
but
right.
if assuming we proceed, it will then go into effect.
I move the motion.
All right. I'll
second.
Further discussion. Let's take a vote, please, then, on 26.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Zossman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Ailes.
Aye. Okay.
27 is a housekeeping measure. If you recall, at the end of the comp plan discussion, we inserted some policy related to transportation planning performance measures into the transportation chapter of the comp plan. And we said at the time that it was kind of clumsy sitting in the policy document. But now that we have the TSP document portions with this package, we'd like to move those and to become objectives in the TSP rather than sit at the highest level in the policy document. Effectively, they're still in effect. We're just moving them to the place where they're with their friends, so to speak, in terms of other policies that are similar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Any questions about this? Is there a motion to approve it then?
So moved. Second.
Further discussion? Let's vote then.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Ailes.
Aye. Okay. And then we have 28 A and B.
So this is concerning Hayden Island bike classifications, and this is another one that you got quite a bit of testimony about. The initial amendment number 38, which is motion A, was to remove the city bikeway classification from Hayden Bay, which is, I believe, circled on the screen. Motion B is an additional change that would also remove the bike segment that passes to the west through the manufactured home park on the north shore of the island. And this, you got testimony on both of these elements. And the second motion B was not part of the original amendment, but you got a lot of testimony supporting that change. And Denver Agarda is here to talk about it from PBOT's perspective.
Yeah, there was a significant amount of testimony, so I just wanted to say a few words for background and clarification. Since 2009, the Hayden Island plan was adopted then. There's been a bicycle classification in place along the river, as shown on the screen, on the waterfront, with the exception of the Hayden Bay Marina. There was no bicycle classification there. The original amendment would be no change to what's been in place since 2009. In April, the Planning and Sustainability Commission reconfirmed their desire to have bicycle access along the river, and voted to add in the Hayden Bay Marina alignment, as shown here with the circle. extending bicycle access to the east. We did receive a lot of testimony from residents of the manufactured home park, particularly concern about being displaced and removal of the existing houses there should the path be built. Classification, this is the bicycle classification. So the classification alone establishes a policy basis to accommodate bicycles if a path is built in the design of that path, and to consider easement and property dedication when the property voluntarily undergoes a major redevelopment. Based on the classification alone, the city would not initiate a path improvement and prior to redevelopment, and therefore there would not be removal of existing homes. A project would have to be in place within the TSP major projects list or the Portland Bicycle Plan project list for PBLOT to make that type of investment in building a path, and that does not exist in either the Portland Bicycle Plan or the TSP as a project, so it's not on either list. As a result, staff was recommending to stay consistent with the adopted Hayden Island Plan that was adopted in 2009, which is shown on the screen. The question is, with testimony that we've heard from the manufacturing park, the second motion was presented as an alternative.
Yeah, so I appreciate the policy basis, but I plan to support both of these amendments. You know, if we need any reassurance that this is the right thing to do to take these off, remember why we just had to do on a, albeit on a grander scale, why we needed to move forward with Better NATO. We don't have room for a wide public way along this bayfront and along the waterfront where the mobile home park now exists, unless it was completely redeveloped, to have both people walking along the riverfront and bicycles going by. We would have conflicts on the narrow paved surface that's there. So I think there's no upside to trying to mix pedestrians and bikes in this environment. There's a good bikeway on Tomahawk Island Drive. There could be good bike access in the redeveloped strip malls west of the highway when that someday happens, but there's no need to either scare people in the short run or even hold out the prospect that there's ever likely to actually be a bikeway on that waterfront. I don't think it's ever going to happen no matter what we say. So I think there's very little upside to it, quite a bit of short-term downside by scaring people, and therefore I think I believe we ought to pass both of these and take it off.
I do too. And the manufactured home park is already very walkable and bicyclable, right. Just not in people's backyards by the river.
Yeah. So it's a different environment out there than typical. So I'll move option A, or motion A.
Should we do them both together?
No, let's do
together.
Both. You want to do them together? All right, let's do, take them both together. I'll move both of them.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Gossman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you.
So you had already
done 29.
Done 29.
So we have 30, and then we can go back maybe to 25.
Sure.
It's like our city attorney's ready for it.
Okay. You want to go back then? All right. Let's go back then to 25, was it? Yes, 25.
25.
Okay.
Thank you.
Magic of the print button.
Yeah.
And as this is being passed out, colleagues, you'll remember that we had an extensive discussion in the comprehensive plan policy about what things should be considered in street vacations, and this is merely checking back on that and making sure it's all listed.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, Steve, what it now would say is the area proposed to be vacated is not needed presently and is not identified in any adopted plan for public services, transportation functions, utility functions, stormwater functions, view corridors, and or viewpoints, tree planting / retention, pedestrian amenities, or community or commercial uses. So in other words, if there's a plan to use this right away for one of those purposes, hang on to it.
I have not realized that this was the change that was being requested, because unfortunately we're moving away from adopting community plans. So I would...
It says any adopted plan. It doesn't have to be a community plan. It could be
the comprehensive plan?
Yeah. Well, or these neighborhood... or these district connectivity plans that they're working on now, right?
What do I push?
Courtney to the rescue?
Maybe. So Courtney Duke, transportation. I think originally this
conversation about adopted plan had come from the tree plans is one of the things that at least when we were looking at it as staff had looked at. And then we look at, in the past, when we've done it as a part of the comprehensive plan, we have looked at existing neighborhood plans. So the existing plans from the 80s and 90s, we have gone back to look at, an example being, I think, in the Westmoreland plan, there were some connections identified to the river that were not necessarily bike or ped paths identified later that we looked at in one of our street vacations. So I believe that that's what, why we had put that we kept that in there, because we still look at the old plans to just see if there's something that might be needed. We wanted to be able to give direction to, and I know Commissioner Fritz is interested in, you know, to future staff as to what they should look at. And I know that I always wanted to make sure staff looked at any adopted plans in the area. And I agree with Mayor Hales, it could be a street connectivity plan, it could be an existing neighborhood plan, it could be the master street plan. You know, and again, it's identified. I mean, there's still criteria. There are still things that even if it's there, you may still make a finding that it's not relevant anymore or something else has overridden it. I think the concern that as staff had was the questions about some of the tree plans and the tree plantings and what that would mean for vacating a street, that if there was an identified tree or something, because those are new. Those are newer plans that we haven't used in a vacation before. But I think that we're comfortable with moving forward with this, and if we start coming up with problems or issues related to that, we can revisit it, or that'll be a part of our work as a part of a team.
Thank you for walking us through that. And I've passed out the whole approval criteria, and so we've got other places where it says doesn't impede the future use of development or access to. So I'm moving all the amendments as written here, please.
Can I just ask one question about drafting? In sub A, it says the council, the proposed language now is the council will consider the following factors as relevant, and it replaces the approval criteria are as follows. What does the word relevant add, as opposed to just saying the council will consider the following factors?
And that was Catherine Beaumont's suggestion, was it?
I had suggested the as relevant simply because not every one of the listed things may be relevant to the particular street vacation. So it'd say you would consider.
Oh, I see what you mean. I didn't read it that way. So it's as relevant is conditional,
right.
not superfluous.
Correct.
Right.
I read it as you're telling us that we're going to consider these factors because they're relevant. I was thinking, well, why do I need to be told they're relevant if we have to consider them?
This is why we need an Oxford
you're
comma.
You're saying
right?
As
so put an Oxford comma after, which I hate
I think
to say as a Cambridge grad.
It's a comma.
It's a Cambridge comma.
After factors.
Yes, exactly.
Factors. Yeah.
That's the missing piece for me.
All right. The Oxford or Cambridge comma, whoever wants to take credit for it, is added as a friendly amendment.
And I do want to thank Courtney and Catherine Beaumont for all their work on this, and Claire Adamczyk in my office.
All right. So Commissioner Fritz moved that. Did someone second it? I will.
Second.
Oh, Steve did. All right. Then let's proceed, unless there's any further questions about this, with the language as included in the November 15th memorandum with the Oxford-Cambridge comma. Roll call, please.
Well, thank you also to Commissioner Novick and Kate Shriver and his office and all of the people who've worked on this. As you have known from the beginning, this is one of my most important pieces, and I'm very happy we got it here. Thank you. Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Yeah.
Osman?
Aye.
Novick?
I really appreciate the work with Commissioner Fritz and Claire, and the work of Erica and Katie and my staff, and the work of your staff. Point. Thank you. Aye.
Yes, thank you for sweating those details. They will matter. We just can't quite see where yet, but they will. Aye. Okay. Do we have anything left?
There's two others left.
30, right?
30 and 31.
Yeah, there we go.
30 is a motion to adopt Amendment 52, and this concerns, this is a direction for BPS to take a look at, over the next year, the purpose and the scope of the F overlay along Skyline. I believe there's a slide, Ben, if you wouldn't mind. Yeah, there's an area along Skyline near Forest Park that has the future urban overlay.
that was originally put in place to require 20-acre minimum lot sizes in this area. This is an area of the city that's outside the urban growth boundary, which is a little unusual, but it predates the UGB. We had already annexed it, but upon creation of the UGB, we were required to treat it as rural land. And it is still going to be rural land, but the now that Metro is close to resolving its urban and rural reserves question, once that is resolved, there is the opportunity for us to consider whether 20 acres or 2 acres is the appropriate rural designation in that area. And the property owner has requested that we take a look at that question. It is something that probably should be looked at. We don't know which way we would go on that, but it would probably involve looking at transportation and stormwater considerations and whether that 20-acre lot size is helpful to that, those other issues. We don't object to looking at it.
Okay. Any further questions about this one? Is there a motion to adopt it?
So moved.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Fritz.
It's always a good thing when we study things more. Aye. Well, mostly anyway. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, and 31.
This is this last one is kind of a cleanup, and this is a catch-all that includes a number of properties that fall into the category of you made a decision in the spring with the comp plan map, and testimony came up that caused you to maybe question some of the comp plan designations there. You can't amend the comp plan with this implementation zoning ordinance without reopening that, which we advised you against. But a way to move forward would be to make this list and direct us to come back as a post-acknowledgement amendment once the new comp plan is in effect and relook at some of these properties and either reaffirm the decision we made or go in a different direction. But this was responsive to testimony. We added a couple properties based on the most recent hearing that came out of the testimony from Allison Reynolds, I believe.
Okay. What is 3138WIN?
That's just the address. It's a vacant site, so it's a parcel within 3138 North Vancouver.
That within. Okay.
Yeah.
A new acronym at the end of the process.
I didn't know that part of Portland.
What happens when we cut and paste from Portland maps.
All right. Okay, is there a motion to approve
this? I moved.
I'll second that. Any further discussion of this cleanup grass catcher item? Roll call.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Next steps.
So given that we've finished the discussion of any amendments, I guess the next step that we had contemplated was you would direct us to go back and prepare findings and prepare an updated ordinance that incorporates these amendments that you've made. We have on the calendar, I think, a session on December 14th at 2 p.m. That you would essentially be continuing this item to so that we can bring those back to you, and then that would be the motion to pass to second reading, and we have another session on the 21st to take that final second reading.
Okay, so directed, and
one question, Mayor. What do we have on the calendar for the afternoon of December 7th? Joe, this came up yesterday. Is that residential infill?
It is.
That's what it is, yeah.
So, colleagues, I may have a conflict that afternoon, and I had raised that before, and it somehow got scheduled on this day. Would you have any objection to moving that a day or to another time off of that afternoon?
I don't have any objection as long as we have a slot where we can put it.
How much time was set aside for that?
For residential infill, it was 90 minutes.
Is there an alternative that week, like Thursday?
No, that's your fossil fuel vote for just a few minutes, but then inclusionary housing. And then the next week is full.
Okay, well, we'll
right. The
stick
15th,
with it for now.
Though,
we'll stick with it for now.
Let's just stick with it for now, and then we can return to the – we have time to adjust if we have to.
Thank you.
And obviously today is a Tuesday, right? So we've got – and we had this session extra. It seems to me with the amount of stuff that we've got less – that we want to finish up before the end of the year, that we might want to, we might need to schedule either some Tuesdays or some evenings or both,
right,
to get through
it
all.
I would appreciate